Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week, Lama Kathy Wesley gives a talk entitled Facing Tragedy and Finding Hope. In the aftermath of the Tree of Life synagogue shooting, Lama Kathy discusses how fear leads to hate and how we can wear out the habits of delusion in our everyday lives. Enjoy the podcast.
Thanks, everyone, for being here today. My plan as of yesterday was to come in today and to take questions from all of the people assembled and to create a Dharma talk based on those questions that I gathered from the people who are here. Those plans changed a little bit. Yesterday with the tragic events in Pittsburgh and coming in this morning, driving in and parking in the parking lot, I admit to feeling a twinge and sadness about being here but wanted to be here with our brothers and sisters at Tiferet Israel. While I will take some questions and use them as the basis for my remarks, I'm going to speak slightly shorter than usual so that we can gather outdoors for an incense offering. I don't know if we have enough text for everyone, but I'll be reciting a Tibetan prayer. And then we can all sort of join in with mantra. I think that might be the easiest way to do it, would be just for me to recite the text and to explain each portion of the ceremony. The ceremony will be approximately 10 minutes long. And we'll all be praying for the benefit of not just the people who were in harm's way yesterday in Pittsburgh, but also all people. Because I feel that more and more, as these tragic events unfold in our world, the fact that they continue to shock us is actually in some ways a relief. Because what would be more worrisome would be is if we were not moved by them. If we heard about these events and then were not moved to compassion. And so being able to have a heart that may be heavy with sadness at news of these events, having a heart that feels heavy is better than having no heart at all. And so I think the more that we can come together and the more that we can have our time together and to sort of bring the family in toward each other, to bring the family together in whatever way we possibly can at times like this is really beneficial. So I'll make some remarks about that in just a few minutes. But I'd like to start this morning with a short prayer. The prayer I'm going to recite is the four-line prayer of taking refuge. And if it's a prayer with which you are familiar, you can join in and recite it along with us. But if it's a prayer with which you are unfamiliar, you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you dedicate this time with us, that you dedicate this time with us to the freedom and liberation of yourself and all sentient beings. So we'll start with that short prayer. And I'm going to recite it three times this morning. So. O Sanje Chedang Soji Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Su Chi Daji Chin Soji Be Sunam Ki Drola Pinshi Sanjay Drupa Show
Sanje Chudan Soji Chonamla Changchu Pardu Dani Kyab Suchi Daji Jin Soji Bei Sunam Ki Drola Pinchir Sanjay Truparsho Sanjay Chudan Soji Chonamla Changchu Pardu Dani Kyab Suchi Daji Jin Soji Bei Sunam Ki Drola Pinchir Sanjay Truparsho
我身见当时对话当对为给当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年派给去当年
As mentioned at the top, I'll be asking for a few questions from the community here in just a few minutes to help to sculpt and to shape the talk that I'm going to give. But before I do that, I have a tiny bit of housekeeping to share with you. As some of you mentioned that you came today because you expected to see Lama Tom Broadwater here offering his usual fourth Sunday talk on the way of the Bodhisattva. I apologize for being your substitute teacher today, but as many of you know, Tom's wife Connie was seriously injured in a car accident several weeks ago and is continuing to convalesce in a nursing care facility near their home in Zanesville. And Lama Tom said to me last week, he said, "I really want to finish what I start. So I really want to finish this series of teachings on the way of the Bodhisattva. I really want to finish them." He said, "Because my teacher told me you should finish what you start, especially if it's virtuous. Non-virtuous, maybe not so much, but if you're doing something virtuous, it's good to finish what you start." So he said, "I'm determined." But he has requested, and the KTC has offered him a leave of absence from teaching. And he has, even when I was speaking with him this week, he said that he was going to take his leave October, November, and December, and then reassess. So for the fourth Sundays in October, November, and December, I'll be here with you sharing on various topics, because I too would like to see Lama Tom finish his teachings on the way of the Bodhisattva, and I'm not going to try to take his place and try to give the teachings in his place, because he is uniquely gifted in this area and uniquely able to communicate this particular topic. He's really worked hard on it, studied it extensively, and I want him to be able to share that with you. So that's the little bit of housekeeping. Now today, I had planned, as I mentioned last week, I had planned on taking some questions from the audience to help to sculpt and to shape what I'm going to be talking about today. But as I mentioned earlier, the topic of my talk changed a little bit over the day yesterday. And so I am going to be addressing the topic of being human, and how difficult it is to be human. And I'm going to talk a little bit about grief and how difficult it is to experience grief. And then finally, I'm going to talk about the Buddhist teaching on ill will. I know that's going to sound weird, but just hear me out. It has to do with public discourse. So anyway, so I'll be talking about those three topics. So so does anybody have anything they would like for me to especially cover today? And I can, you don't have to go to the question microphone to ask these. I'll repeat them for the recording. Does anybody have anything they would particularly like to hear today? Yes. Okay, I can, yeah, the questioner is, where does evil come from in Buddhism? And we can talk about that. I'll make sure that that's covered in the remarks I'm going to make. Thank you for asking that question. It's actually an extremely important question, both for us as individuals and as a society, so thank you for that. There was a question over here. Yes, Linda.
I don't know if that's accurate. But mm-hmm. you talked about the human condition, mm-hmm. it just seemed like that the problems caused by fear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, the questioner, I'll do a little paraphrase. I don't know about that. I was saying to somebody the other day that my previous career, the 15 years I spent as a newspaper reporter, helped in one area, and that is that I can sometimes listen and sometimes repeat, back what people say. So the questioner is saying that in many cases, hatred comes from fear, But it's not common that we talk much about this fear. It's not common, and how can we begin to talk about it? Is that fair, or am I missing? Yeah. Okay. And there's room on my pad for one more. Is there one more? Yes, please. Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
So I act in ways that aren't
in alignment with
what I want to be, with the way that I, would prefer to act. And sure. I get caught in this cycle of, well, you should have.
Oh, yeah.
I want to know when that's going to stop.
Yeah. Sure. I think that this actually addresses the very first topic that that I was going to be talking about, which is how difficult it is to be a human being. Because the questioner is saying that her experience, as she's been meditating the last while, has been to notice that sometimes her emotions hijack her thoughts and words and actions. And then we find ourselves thinking, saying, and doing things that are not in keeping with our value system or what we think is important and so forth. And that then once we partake of these actions, thoughts, and words that are not in keeping with our way of viewing ourselves in the world, they're not in keeping with our value systems, how we then can sometimes get caught in a cycle of what my friends in 12 Step say, woulda, coulda, shoulda. I should have done this, I should have done this, I could have done this, I would have done that. And then how to work with those feelings and thoughts and emotions and words, and how to kind of get off that cycle. Is that okay? All right. So beginning by addressing this question of being human, I really do think that this is really what we're all up against, because I think everybody in this room has experienced the feelings of being disliked or being criticized by others. We've all experienced this, and we've all felt the hurt of being called something we are not. And we've all experienced some type of feeling of being attacked, whether it's physically, emotionally, or in whatever way. So we've all felt like we were being put on the defensive. We were being perhaps even victimized. And we've all felt like that. And that feeling of hurt, that things didn't go the way we thought they should, or that people didn't treat us the way we thought they should, these kinds of feelings can stay with us because we grasp onto our idea of who we think we are. And this is one of the basic teachings of Buddhism, is that when we grasp onto who we think we are and hold that really tightly, then that instantly turns everything else into other. Everybody else and everything else becomes other. Once we grasp at our idea of us, when we grasp at self, then immediately everything else becomes other. And then we have to start thinking about dividing the world into friendlies and enemies. So we begin to divide the world into people we hope will be with us in our quest for our own well-being. And then we begin to look at with suspicion and distrust toward people who will not support what we feel should happen in our lives and in the world. And this division of the world first into me and not me, or self and other, and then subsequent subdividing of those others into friendlies and enemies, then really talks about the difficulty of being human. We have so much to keep straight. We have so much to think about. And there is fear that arises when we are in the presence of other, because in some cases, the fear arises that this other may harm me or my friends or my family. And then sometimes there's the fear that that just the existence of an other threatens who I think I am. We see this all the time. When people place themselves in front of the world, you know how this is. You've all gone on job interviews. You know how it is. You go in front of a group of people who are going to judge you, and it's scary. And then the idea, that's where self and other really shows up, doesn't it? In situations like this where we feel we're being judged, where we feel that everybody's watching our every step, and we become uncomfortable. Why? According to the teachings of the Buddha, as quoted by Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche in one of his books, I can't remember if it was Myth of Freedom or Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, he said, all fear is an identity crisis. All fear comes from an identity crisis, because the existence of somebody else, whether it's somebody we think is more talented than we are, or we think of somebody is more popular than we are, or better looking than we are, they threaten us just by being different. Because we no longer feel comfortable in our identity of who we think we are. We define ourselves a certain way. I am this. And I've spent my whole life being this and trying to become this. And now you're all going to judge that? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this brings up a deep kind of fear that we are not good enough. It brings up a fear we are not good enough and will be judged as not being good enough. And so sometimes, instead of feeling that fear, staying with that fear and acknowledging it and examining it to see whether it's accurate or not, what happens is instead of examining our feelings, we immediately rush to judgment so that we can stop feeling that way. So immediately we go outward and say, it's that person's fault. Or it's that person's fault that I feel this way, that I feel this fear. And the best way to not feel this fear is for that person to not be here anymore in my life. And this happens so often because we don't examine. We don't examine the process. This morning, I had the good fortune of sitting with Lama Tom's Nundro class. You guys are great, by the way. Fourth Sunday, they show up here and they do their preliminary practices. They meditate and chant and work on the preliminaries for Mahamudra, which is the highest meditation practice of our tradition. And one of the quotes that we read today really speaks to this: being human and having fear. Feeling the existence of others and fearing the existence of others and feeling what that means to us and questioning our identity of who we think we are. And this is I how it is. These days you get a cell phone, you take a picture of the quote in the book. This is Mingyur Rinpoche talking about how human beings process reality We continuously compose and dissolve realities in our minds. Think about that. The Buddha said we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we create our world. So we are creating the idea of who we think we are, and that is dissolving in the moment when we feel attacked or when we feel the presence of other. That reality that we think we know dissolves. And so then we take action, and we gain habits of action and reaction and reaction and reaction. But what's interesting is if we sit and actually look at what we've created, it doesn't last. It disappears. Anybody who's meditated knows this. Anybody ever meditated in this room? Let's see how many. Okay. All right. Can anybody tell me what happens when you have a thought? What happens when you have a thought? Anybody can willing to share? Say that again. We follow it. Right. But what happens if we don't follow it? It disappears. And everybody's had that experience of sitting in meditation and watching the thought come and go and come and go. And watching the breath, come and go. And then a thought comes in, and for a moment, it swallows us and takes us into the world of that thought, the story that that thought leads us to. And then the moment we recognize that we're thinking and we can let it go and then return our attention to the breath for a fresh start, the world, that thought and the world it created is gone. And what Mingyur Rinpoche says here is he's describing this process, that we are continuously, by what thoughts we grab onto, what thoughts we talk to, what thoughts we work on over and over again, that's our habit. That's why fear keeps going. That's why hatred keeps going. That's why all of these negative mental afflictions keep going, is because we have a habit of keeping them going, thinking that somehow it's good, thinking that somehow it's going to solve things. As one of my friends said, I just keep thinking the same thing over and over again, hoping that the story will turn out differently. You know, it's like we do that over and over again. But it usually doesn't work that way. But if we can begin to examine the process and begin to analyze it and see what we are fearful of and how impermanent it is, we can begin to let it go. We can begin to let it go. And so Mingyur Rinpoche says, we continually compose and dissolve realities in our mind. Yet, in ordinary life, we are not encouraged to explore this. In ordinary life, we get paid for our thoughts. We get paid for our words. We get paid for our actions. We never think about where they come from. We never bother to think about where they come from and how useful they are. And so I think with sadness of all of the people who are doing journalism online today, especially opinion journalism, where they feel they have to use harsh language to make the other seem worse. You see it. It's really people get paid for the clever put down. They get paid to rile people up against one another, because getting those people riled up is money. It translates into money for their advertisers. I know. I was a journalist. I know how this works. And sometimes I feel like some of the things that are happening to me in my life right now are happening because I gleefully criticized others without feeling even a little bit of guilt. Basically what he says next is, he says, we need a kind of laboratory of the mind in which we can creatively experiment, and imagination practice provides the laboratory that helps us accomplish this. So basically, when we are doing meditation, we become a laboratory. We become a way of looking at our thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And by finding a way to look at our thoughts and feelings and emotions and let go of them, we can see the power they have held on us for so long, and begin to weaken the power that they have held on us for so long. Just by being able to let go of a single thought, we can then see the impermanence of all thoughts. And this is why I think the questioner mentioned this, and it's really true. This is why emotions hijack our thoughts. Emotions are actually just thoughts that have a lot of habit energy behind them. I think of thoughts as being like little weeds. You know, like a dandelion seed touches the ground and, you know, instantly you get something, right? And so the this tiny thought of, oh, that person is bad, or oh, that situation is bad, or oh, here they come again, then it keys into how we have habitually responded to people, and it creates this sudden explosive growth of the weed of our negativity. And so I do agree with what the other questioner is saying, is that hatred comes from fear. It does come from the idea of other, and then being threatened by the mere existence of the other, because it begins to shake our identity of who we think we are and how we think the world is and or should be. And that's why we get these elaborate violent acts that are being taken out against what is perceived as other. Elaborate schemes, elaborate acts in order to prove that the other does not deserve to even exist. But it starts in the mind. And this is why meditation is so useful. Even if you can just let go of one emotion, even if you can just let go of a single emotion on your meditation seat, that begins to show you how ephemeral and how impermanent they all are. And then you can begin to make better choices, because when they weaken, when their power over you begins to weaken, you get encouraged. And then you can begin to make a different choice. And that's where Buddhism comes in, because the Buddha's teachings are very simple. Do no harm whatsoever, practice virtue as much as possible, and tame your mind. That's it. So do no harm means not to hurt yourself and not to hurt others. To practice virtue means to take care of yourself and to benefit others. And tame your mind means to practice self-awareness and meditation so that you can begin to make better choices about thoughts, words, and actions, and do less harm and more benefit. And this also covers the questioner who was asking about where evil comes from in Buddhism. Buddhism has very interesting teachings about this, because the Buddha taught that every single being, there is not one excepted, every single being has a mind and has this a capability for self-awareness, this capacity for self-awareness. And because beings have minds and they have the capacity for self-awareness, and that self-awareness can lead to the accomplishment of Buddhahood, okay, maybe dust mites don't have the intellectual capacity to meditate. Okay, I understand that. But they have a mind, and they are aware of being alive. And so we call them sentient beings. So they may not be able to accomplish Buddhahood, but they have Buddha nature. Therefore, they are deserving of respect. So in other words, because Buddhahood is the or awakening or enlightenment or freedom from all of this bondage, the bondage of fear, the bondage of hate, the bondage of attachment. Because this freedom from mental affliction is the promise of Buddhahood, and because everybody has the potential for Buddhahood, this means that essentially everybody is basically good. Everybody is basically good, because Buddhahood is the all good. And therefore, when people are not able to recognize this within themselves, they are obscured by their habitual tendencies, their negative actions and habits of thoughts and actions. They're also obscured by their self-fixation. And they're lastly obscured by the whole division of self and other. The moment we look at somebody else and say other, we've made a mistake, because we've made them different from us. And when we've made them different from us, then we can actually begin to push them away and eventually do wrong toward them. And so the Buddha taught that evil is not what people are naturally. Basic goodness is within all beings, but it is obscured by our mental afflictions, and that some people see their mental afflictions as afflictions and try to dispel those obscurations, and other people choose not to. Other people see their obscurations and mental afflictions and choose to strengthen them. and to make themselves, I guess you could say, super obscured. They're not just slightly obscured, they become super obscured. They push their humanity farther and farther and farther away from themselves. And by doing that, they close the possibility for becoming a Buddha and recognizing their own goodness in this life. Because what we really need to understand is that all of us who have a mind have the potential for goodness, and you wouldn't want to kill that. I just want to say that again. Because we all have a mind that has the potential for goodness and Buddhahood and wisdom, you can't even imagine wanting to kill that. So this is why Buddhism teaches that it is important for people not to take their own lives. And this is why the Buddha's teaching is that it is not correct to take the lives of others. So because we don't want to cut off that potential that we possess for Buddhahood, we take care of ourselves and benefit others and try to lift them up so that they can see their own Buddha nature as well. And so this is where our own habits come from. When we recognize our own habits of how we categorize people and what we call them, and how we criticize, I've talked about this before, there's the continuum of, shall we say, how do I want to put this? The continuum of judgment, I'll just call it that. First, we criticize. We say, that person's not like me, and I feel I am better. This happens all the time. I mean, at work, they always say, you know, hey, this person's smarter than this person does their job better than this person, and so we're going to reward this person with more money, and we're going to try and find another place, put that person, and so forth and so on. But when we criticize other people, saying they should live like I do, they should think like I do, they should be like me, what we're doing is we're setting up a really negative relationship with that other person. Sure, it's fine to criticize people and to help them do a better job, but if you think you are inherently better than that other person, then that's actually an injustice to you, the person who is making the criticism. But that's how it starts, isn't it? I am different from this person, and I am smarter than this person, and I am better than this person, so why can't they see how smart and how good I am? And so the idea is first we criticize them, and that's where we start the slide of ill will. First, we criticize them. If we're online, we can feel the impunity of them not really knowing or being in the same room with us, so we can start calling them names. You know, you've seen it. You maybe even done it yourself. I think I have. Where you call the other side by a name. If you're in modern politics, you'll talk about conservatives as deplorables. And if you are a conservative, you'll look at the people who have a different point of view as libtards. The idea is that people will call each other horrible names as part of their criticism. And what they're doing is they're pushing that person's humanity away. And what's interesting is they're actually pushing their own humanity away, as we will see when we go to the next stage. Once you criticize, then you begin to ostracize, where you say, I don't want to be with those people anymore. I'm going to push them out to the edge of society. They shouldn't be here with me. I'm smart. I'm good. I don't want those people with me. And then we ostracize them. We stop looking at them. We stop talking to them. We stop thinking they matter. And then the next stage after that, we actually marginalize them. We say, could you like go live somewhere else where I don't have to look at you and feel different? And then we begin to demonize them. And then once that happens, we turn them into something other than human. And then if anybody here served in the military, you know what happens is that the enemy is someone you can kill. It's what has to happen to make... I read about this, that psychologists have analyzed military training, and they say that part of what happens is that human beings naturally, for the most part, human beings don't want to kill or hurt one another. So you have to teach them to do that, to overcome that natural wish to not harm somebody. So you have to have them overcome that by training them to think differently. Criticize, ostracize, marginalize, demonize. Then harm becomes easy. And that turns us into something that we don't want to become. And it takes a long time to overcome that training once you've had it, but it can be done, and I've met people who've done it. So it's not a hopeless situation, because our minds are always dynamically moving. Habits can be changed. If one thought can be changed, an entire habit can be changed. If you can let go of one thought in meditation, that's empowerment. Letting go of one thought in meditation is letting go of one situation. And so that's a little bit about the topics that people have asked me to talk about today. Where does evil come from? How do we deal with the hatred that comes from fear? And how do we come, and how do we not allow our emotions to hijack us? The idea is that by doing the practice of meditation on the one hand, and on the other hand, beginning to train in the opposite of hatred, which is love and compassion, training in seeing other people as we are. If we can do that, then we can begin to make a change. First of all, we have to refrain from using these terms of ill will, refrain from demonizing and attaching labels to people. I want you, everybody here, to think about your own language. I know we live in a free society with free speech, but there is such a thing as responsibility. And there are consequences. Speech has consequences. And the things we repeat are the things we believe. So why don't we want to believe in something different? We can. And so this is my hope, is that we will take a peek this week at our own language and how we express ourselves, and to back up against the ill will and to recognize our own ill will as ill will. We have to recognize ill will as something that's negative. It's one thing to want safety for our families and to want to put criminals in jail. Buddhists are not saying that criminals should not go to jail. They're just saying that we need to think about them differently. And if you have time this evening, the Vespers service at St. Stephen's Episcopal on the OSU campus will be the perfect place to be. It's at 5:00 this afternoon. And our own Kim Miracle will be giving the message. She's bringing the message this evening about forgiveness and how a person can actually work with their own anger in the moment to forgive someone who's caused harm. So it's like, they reached out to us and we said Kim's the one, because she was the one who appeared in court and spoke to the judge about the arsonist who set fire to our place and burned it down. And Kim will give a great message tonight. I hope it's recorded so we can all hear it. That would be lovely. They haven't told. If not, we'll make the transcript of it available. I think it's worth reading, because it's about being human. Yeah, so I thank you for, because it is possible to overcome. It is possible to overcome if we train in the opposite. If we don't train in the opposite, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, you can train in the opposite very easily by sitting anywhere, anytime, and imagine that you extend love first to yourself, then that you imagine that you extend love to all the people that you care for, then that you extend love to all the beings who you don't know, then you extend love to all the beings in the universe, and then finally you extend love to all those people who have harmed you or who you think are harmful. And by mentally extending love to them, this is a training in the opposite of hatred. We have to train in the opposite. We can't expect that meditation is going to do it all. Meditation makes us notice our habits, but training in love allows us to abandon the negative ones. And so this simple practice of first imagining that you extend love to yourself, that could take 10 seconds. Then imagining that you extend it to your dear ones, that's another 10 seconds. Then that you imagine that you share love with all beings that you know, another 10 seconds. The beings you don't know, another 10 seconds. And even those who cause harm, another 10 seconds. So in the space of a minute, you can change your thinking for that minute and start a different habit of thought. So I saw that you had a question. Do you still have a question, sir? Oh, I see. I see. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's if the questioner is asking how people are taught, can be taught to overcome their natural human distaste for causing violence against themselves and other people, if there are ways to do that. Oh, yeah, there are definitely ways to do that, because all you have to do is take those fears that people have about others and magnify them, and make the threat from others appear to be greater than it really is. And if you can make the person feel far enough away and far and away superior to the other people, then that gives them the permission to begin to harm them. Are you supposed to take legal action against radicalization? Well, we've got a problem in the United States, and that we have a real delicate line to cross, you know, because I work for a newspaper, and free speech is a real thing. But so what we have to do as a society is decide, as a society, how much of this kind of hate speech we want to tolerate. You see what I'm saying? Because if we don't like hate speech, we're starting to make it against the law. So I think that's really a beneficial thing to kind of, as a society, begin to decide what kind of vocal and written ill will do we want to not tolerate while still allowing free speech. And I think that what happens in the military, unfortunately, is part of the problem that we face. Sorry? Mm-hmm. I still can't hear you. Oh, I see. Right. I see. Well, I do feel that many people who have military training, they have a problem on their hands, is that they've been already trained to overcome their natural distaste for harming others. So it's kind of like having a weapon. If you have a weapon and you don't care for it properly, it could hurt you. And so I think that it's really a very difficult thing. And this is why we have to look at who's leading the military people and making sure that they're the best possible. Because the military is like having a weapon, because they're trained to go out and cause harm. They're trained for that. So I appreciate, because of the time, I'm going to have to stop the conversation with you about that right now, because we have to go out and pray. And so maybe what we could do is we could continue the conversation after the prayer service. If you'd like to do that, you're welcome to stay, and I can talk to you about it after that. Okay? Yeah. I really appreciate you bringing your questions, because what we have to remember is that if we think that anybody is evil, and that they, and so forth and so on, that's actually, we're actually thinking that part of us is evil. And so if we think that the military and the people who run the military are evil, then that means eventually we could harm them. And so what we have to do is we have to find a different way. And hopefully other people in society will agree that we have to take action. And that's why we vote, basically, is to put different people in charge of the military. So I appreciate your concern about that and bringing your concern. And so in Buddhism, evil is not like an inherent part of being a human being, but it does come up from these fears. So let's all of us go out to pray now, because that's the one thing we know we can do. So my hope is that by having this conversation, we've at least gotten a start on subduing the ill will in our own minds, because that's really what because we can't fix all that is wrong with society, but we can fix our own hatred and our own ill will and our own fear. And so it's my hope that when we go out into the courtyard now to pray, and what I'm going to encourage you to recite is the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. Omane Peme Hung, each of these fights against one type of mental affliction. Om purifies our pride, arrogance, and superiority over others. Ma fights our jealousy and our competitiveness with others. Ni, our attachment. Me, our stupidity and our chosen ignorance. Me is stinginess and miserliness. And Hong, our hatred. And so if we can recite this mantra, Om Mani Padme Hung, then all six of these negative mental afflictions will be subdued within us. I've met a young man one time who said he was plagued by angry thoughts, and that he had a lot of angry thoughts and they upset him. And he said, I've been starting to recite the mantra Om Mani Padme Hung as an antidote to letting those thoughts run away with me. He said, is that all right? And I said, absolutely. So hopefully this will be of some help. So let's sit quietly for just a moment and mentally dedicate the goodness of our session today. We dedicate the goodness to all suffering beings. May all beings everywhere be freed from suffering, especially from their fear and their hatred. May they train their minds in love and compassion, and may they be able to benefit all beings skillfully in all aspects of the world. We dedicate this goodness with this thought in mind. So if you have some time, you can join us out in the courtyard if it's open. If the door to the courtyard is locked, we'll just go out the back door. So take your shoes.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.